Okay, this week is Parshas HaChodesh, and I want to discuss, first of all, Parshas HaChodesh. HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodashim Rishon Hu Lechem Lechodshei Hashanah. It's the first month of the year. We know later on in the Torah we're told that Nisan is always B'Chodesh Aviv. It's the springtime. And there has to be some special connection between the idea of the springtime and Pesach and the renewal of Pesach every year. Now, there is a very strange Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, we know that we have four parshios. The first that have special maftirs, that you have Parsha Shkolem, you have Parsha Zachar, you have Parsha Parah, and you have Parsha HaChodesh. Parsha HaChodesh is the last of the four special Shabbosos. And sometimes, between the different weeks, there is a week that doesn't have a special maftir, a special Torah. There's sort of a break. However, in regard to between Parshas Parah and Parshas HaChodesh, there is no break. And the Yerushalmi in Megillah mentions a special siman, a mnemonic, if you want, or similar to a mnemonic, to serve to remind us of this fact. And the halacha is that in regard to the four cups of wine, we know throughout the recitation of the Haggadah, there are four cups of wine. The first cup is Kiddush. The second cup is the second cup is by after we discuss the whole episode of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus from Egypt. We talk about the enslavement, the freedom of the Jew, the Makos that overtook the Egyptians, the plagues that overtook the Egyptians, the salvation of the Jew, the mitzvos of the night. And then we say the bracha, b'sher galonu b'golos ha'baseinu, b'hegiyonu ha'layla hazeh, lecho b'matzah morer. So there, we have the second cup. And then there is the third cup, which we recite at the conclusion. We say recite the Birchas Hamazon over it. And then there is the fourth cup with the conclusion of the Hallel. And the halacha is that between the second and third cup, that's during the meal, one is allowed to drink extra cups of wine. Of course, it's advisable not to overdo it. But between the third and fourth cup, one is not allowed to drink. Whether one is allowed to drink extra cups of wine between the first and second cup, there is a machlokas between the Kolbo and the Rashbam. But so the Yerushalmi says, just like one is not allowed to drink an extra cup of wine between the third and fourth cup at the Seder, between the cup of Birchas HaMazon, the cup of the benching, and the cup that we recite at the conclusion of the second hallel. So too, there is no intervening week between Parshas Parah and Parshas HaKadosh. The immediate Shabbos after Parshas Parah is Parshas HaKadosh. And we could say it's just a mnemonic. It's just a way of remembering. There is no real significant connection between the two halachas. But we could say that no, there is a connection between the two halachas. Because it seems odd that these two halachas would be connected. And furthermore, why would a person be more acquainted with one halacha than the other halacha? Now, I just want to mention that this shiur is dedicated in memory of Mr. Morris Borg, very fine person. I always mention the week of his yahrzeit, I always dedicate this shiur. He lived across the street from my parents. He was a member of my shul. He was a person who could be admired and served as an example for special character traits. And these weeks, as we approach Pesach, we went from Schiras Amalek, from remembering the tragedy of Amalek, to remembering the delivery of the Jewish people. He was a European Jew who had to flee, had to come to America. And to a certain degree, it's that generation that represents, that was the bridge that brought over, that came over. They were the bridge between Europe and America. And he has grandchildren and great-grandchildren who are Oskim B'Torah, who are dedicated to Torah, to mitzvos. And in a sense, they are the ones who planted the seeds for the future. And I think this has to do with the topic that I'm going to discuss. Now, so the question that we have to deal with is, what is the connection between the four cups of wine and the four parshios, specifically the last two cups of wine and the last two parshios? Now, it's interesting, the great-grandson of the Rambam wrote a Haggadah. And a parish in the Haggadah, I don't have it anymore. I had it at one time. It was not in the style of the Rambam at all. It was very much involved with Kabbalah. Not something that you would have expected from somebody who followed the public path of the Rambam. But in it, he mentions a very interesting theory. And he says in the Haggadah that the four cups of wine that we have on Pesach correspond with the four parshios. Correspond with the four parshios. That of Parshas Shkalim, Parshas Zachar, Parshas Parah, and Parshas HaChodesh. I don't know that in this year we'll be able to discuss possible connections between all four cups of wine, but he either had a medrash that served as the foundation for this theory, or he based it on this Yerushalmi. And I want to discuss a possible meaning of the Yerushalmi. Now, I've discussed in the past the idea behind Paraduma. I mentioned what my uncle said, that there are three types of reasons for every mitzvah. There's a reason why, there's a reason how, and especially when it comes to Tumah and Tahara, when it comes to halachic contamination. When it comes to halachic contamination, and it comes to the 55% of America is critical of Israel's war of self-defense in Gaza. I think if they make a poll, they should make a poll asking the Americans, what would be if somebody came in to the United States and murdered your children? And did all kinds of terrible things. And they took your child and put him in an oven. Would you be against waging war against those people? It's easy to say, oh, it's just the government. It's just Hamas. You could say that about every nation. The problem is they see it as somebody else. And those people who support the enablers, and some of them Jews, it's because they do not identify themselves as Jews. They do not identify themselves as Jews, but they do not identify themselves as Jews. And it's something that is happening to somebody else. And when we see that it's happening to somebody else, it's not my son who's being put in the oven. So it's easier to tolerate. And it's easy to say, well, I am not supportive of the war of self-defense, and to find excuses for it. This is the problem. Why? Because many Jews are impressed with the nations of the world. Their Judaism emanates from the universalism. Their Judaism is secondary. But if it would be their child, their son, that was put in the oven, then they would begin to think of it differently. Then they would say, we have to take action. And this is without the fact that we know today
that together with the Hamas that went in and murdered and raped and destroyed, there were many so-called non-Hamas Palestinians that joined them, not to talk about the parades, this of celebrating the success of the murders of Jews. Every poll shows that over 70%, and this is what they say, close to 80% of the Palestinians support the Hamas. So who are they fooling? They're trying to fool themselves. Because on one hand, they don't want to admit that they were wrong. They don't want to admit that those that they support are supporting murderers. And they're not just supporting murderers. They are supporting the continuation of murder. It's not just a question of punishing for the past. It's preventing for the future. I mentioned Shabbos and Shul. The Zohar says that you have Amalek among the Jewish people. Also, is it possible? Are there Jews that support murder? Are there Jews that want to destroy the Jewish people? No, but there are Jews that are enablers. And that's the Amalek among the Jewish people. The New York Times wrote positive articles about Hitler, Yamach Shemo. Before World War II, New York Times at that time was owned by Jews. The New York Times at that time was the Amalek among the Jews. And those Jews that consider the New York Times today authoritative are the Amalek among the Jews today. Initially, it took the New York Times how long to admit how terrible the situation was on October 13th. But then, when there was a rumor that Israel bombed the hospital that proved not to be true, that next day, that same day, they wrote against Israel. But you talk, the pseudo intellectuals that dress up as intellectuals but are not capable of real individual thinking. Their thinking is dictated by others, by all kinds of other groups. So these individuals are these individuals who have this approach to this approach, they make believe that they are thinking independently, But who are they thinking independently? Independently of the Jewish people. But they're slaves of the left wing. They don't think for themselves, and they don't think as Jews. But they try to say that we are thinking as Jews. But the truth of the matter is they're not. Schumer, with all his support for Israel, and with his chutzpah of calling himself Shomer Yisrael, is part of the Amalek among the Jewish people. Those who support Amalek, those who enable Amalek, they are the Amalek among the Jewish people. They're not genetic Amalek. But we have to know what comes first for them. I assure you that if Schumer's children would be put in an oven in front of him, he would have a different opinion. And if he wouldn't, that would say something about him also. Now, regarding Parah Aduma, I've discussed it many times. What is the but there is a message. So the reason of why, that we don't know. We don't know. And the reason how, we also don't know. But my uncle said, and we see this from all the other Mepharshim also, the reason of what? The message. Every mitzvah has a message. And to one generation might have one message, and to another generation it might have a different message. And for one individual it might be one message, and for another individual it might be another message. And those who give reasons for mitzvahs, each one had it detected a certain message, and it could be all the messages are true. But I want to tell you what I think. What I think is the message of Parah Aduma. I want to tell you what I think is the message of Parah Aduma. The message of Parah Aduma, what the Chazal tell us, our sages, and I've mentioned this before, our sages tell us that Parah Aduma was the kapara, was the atonement. I see someone message me. I'm not sure what the message was, but I assume they're scared that I said Schumer is the Amalek among the Jewish people. It doesn't mean there's a mitzvah to kill him. I mean that he identifies, he doesn't see the corruption of the Amalek. He doesn't see it. He doesn't see, he in a sense, he's an enabler of Amalek. Because I just want to put it very clearly. If somebody comes in front of me and he holds his child in front of him and he says, you can't shoot, but I can shoot you. You can't shoot me because I am holding my son in front of you. And if this is done on a national level, then there's no question. They're all considered enemies in a war. And this would probably be true even if a large number of the people are not involved in the war. But especially in Gaza, where they cheered and they enabled,
They are the enemies. And it's a war of self-defense. A war of self-defense is we have to save our lives. Saving our lives doesn't just mean saving our lives for today, but saving our lives for tomorrow. It's not enough. As I've mentioned many times, it's not a war of retribution. It's a war of salvation. It's self-defense. And what is necessary for the self-defense is important. And when I talk about Amalek among the Jewish people, I am talking about those that are enabling the men and the enemies of the Jewish people to keep the mission of Amalek alive. I don't mean that they're that chas v'shalom, that they're anti-Semites, but they're enablers of the future murders of the Jewish people. Not that they want that, but there are things that are more important to them. Like I say, if it would be their children that was put in an oven, they would have a different attitude. But they see it's the Jewish people in Israel. It's something different. During World War II, there was a certain rabbi who acted on behalf of Roosevelt to keep the Jewish people quiet. And because of that, the United States did not intervene. The United States did not intervene on behalf of the Jewish people. They did all kinds of things. They dropped pornography near Hitler's, where Hitler was staying. Somehow they thought that would affect him. But they wouldn't bomb the railroad trains, the tracks. They were taking the Jews to the gas chambers. And Roosevelt had his lackeys, some of who were rabbis. And they probably thought it's for the benefit of the whole world. Because they wanted to think that. But believe me, if the Nazis had been here, if the gas chambers had been here, they would have had a different attitude. Their expression about the European Jews who came to America was that they are the weeds of Judaism. And while we have rabbis today that have similar attitudes, they'll be politically more correct in not using those words. They'll talk about the barbarism that is happening in Gaza. So when I say that they're Amalek, I mean they're enablers of Amalek. Obviously, there's no Amalek in Jews literally, but they're enablers of Amalek. And they make up all kinds of excuses for themselves. But the main excuse is they don't see themselves as being Jews. If it had been their brothers, their children, I shouldn't even say their brothers, if they'd seen it, their children, their wives, their husbands, who were massacred. Years ago, I'm getting off topic now, but years ago, I remember when the Nazis wanted to demonstrate in Skokie, Illinois, how Jews, even Jews who never went to synagogue, they were all, and perhaps to an extreme, perhaps over extreme, ready to do battle with them. Today, you don't have that same attitude. You know why? Because you don't have all those survivors. That it wasn't that bad. And then you can use words. People use all kinds of words. Oh, after the election, they'll be more careful. That was very similar to what the New York Times implied about Hitler, Yimach Shemo. It's easy to say something. It's more difficult for them to say, I made a mistake, until it's their child that's killed. That's what I mean when I say there's a Amalek among the Jewish people. I don't, chas v'shalom, mean that the one should go kill them. But they have to be told that they're not fooling us, and at best, they're only fooling themselves. Now, by the Egel Hazav, by the Egel Hazav, so the Jewish people, what caused them to make a golden calf? 40 days after saying Nasa Benishma, 40 days after standing by Mount Har Sinai, they make an Egel Hazav. Why is it? The golden calf. And the Medrash says they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu, in their minds, was late. He didn't come back. And the Satan made it appear to them that Moshe Rabbeinu was dead. They had this confrontation of death. And what happens when one confronts death? Death of a person they admired to. Death of a person they were close to. Sometimes, of course, there's a lot of anger. But sometimes that anger manifests itself in an indulgence. Because when they recognize death, they don't see death as just something that happened to somebody else, but they recognize their own vulnerability. Epicurean said, eat, drink, and be merry. Tomorrow we die. For tomorrow we die. We eat indulgence. When life becomes worthless, we might as well get out of it when we can. Eat, drink, and be merry. And the Jewish people, when they confronted the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, they built this golden calf. And they gave sacrifices to the golden calf. But what was the purpose of the sacrifices? After they gave the sacrifices, they ate, they drank, and they got up to be merry. It was the Epicurean approach. It was a result of the confrontation of death. And Esav HaRasha, when he comes in from the Sodeh, from the field, and he hears that Avram died, so he sells the Bechora, he sells the birthright, which had a spiritual mandate in it, for a pot of lentil soup. And he says, Anochi holeich lamos, I'm going to die, v'lamali Bechora. Life became a process of dying rather than a process of living. And when life becomes a process of dying rather than a process of living, sometimes spirituality becomes worthless. It's one of indulgence. But there are differences, different situations. And Yaakov Avinu, as I always mention, when he heard Taraf Taraf Yosef, that his son Yosef was torn by an animal. And of course, he mourned, and his children got up to console him. Avayimayin, he refused. I'm going to go down to the grave to my son. Life became a process of dying. But for him, it wasn't just, it was a process of dying, but it was withdrawal. It wasn't indulgence. But then when he heard, oh, Joseph chai, that Joseph is alive. But the chiruach Yaakov avihim, the spirit of Yaakov became alive again. In other words, the idea was to reverse the perspective of seeing life as a process of dying into seeing life as a process of living. The Egel Hazav. So in a sense, the Egel Hazav, that represented the idea of seeing life as a process of dying, of indulgence. And because of that, the paraduma. The paraduma is a red par. Red is the symbol of sin. Im yechateichem kashani, kashal yalbinu. And that represents, and it's burnt into ashes. And the ashes represents complete destruction. But together with the complete destruction, there is the water, the living waters, mayim chayim, living waters are combined with it and sprinkled on the person who came in contact with the dead, who is likely to see life as a process of dying rather than a process of living. What is the symbolism? The symbolism, yes, we confronted destruction. We confronted death. But there can be mayim chayim. We can renew ourselves. What is tefillin a mikveh? When a person puts his head underneath the mikveh, the waters of the mikveh, he is in a state of non-existence. One cannot live in that medium. But then when he sticks out his head from the water, he goes from a state of non-existence into a state of existence. He renews himself. That's the process of Tahara. The process of Tahara is renewal. And so Parshas Para reminds us of Parshas Para reminds us of the idea of death, but at the same time it reminds us that life can go on. And what's Parshas HaChodesh? Parshas HaChodesh is HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This is the first. Rishon Lechatzeh Hashanah. Every Nisan is identified with springtime, with the renewal of nature. That even when we confronted death and we saw life as a process of dying, but then we saw that combined with the Mayim Chayim, so we can renew ourselves. We can realize that even when we confront destruction, there can be rebuilding. And this has been true throughout Jewish history. Look at World War II. I mentioned about the Borgs, Mr. and Mrs. Borg. They were European Jews, but they came to America and they rebuilt their families. And there are so many. But people, in a sense, today don't realize the strength of these survivors, of these people who came, who fled and we're able to rebuild. And we have to look at the children. But looking at the children and the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, will only give us the message of revival if we remember who the past was. We have to see those people that were the bridge. Those who said that the Jewish people will continue. Those that did not abandon their nation, their people. Look at the people who rebuilt the state of Israel. Who came from the concentration camps to fight it. To fight for the survival of the Jewish people. And in Israel, that battle continues because they know the alternative. Unfortunately, in America, there are many that are not sensitive to the alternative, especially now that we have less and less survivors around. And so when we take a look, what is the benching, the Birchas HaMazon? The Birchas HaMazon, in a sense, is recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in our life. And not just in the spiritual involvement, but even in the mundane. And then we have the second half of Hallel. What is the difference between the first half of Hallel and the second half of Hallel? The first half of Hallel, and there is, I don't want to get into it now, but the first half of Hallel, according to many, I think, represents the Jewish people going back in time. We're standing at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but say Yisrael Mitzrayim. We are part of the Jewish people leaving Egypt, and we're singing song of thanks and praise to God. The second half of Hallel, as the Gemara says, Matahave Have, what happened, happened already. In the second half of Hallel, we're in the present. And when you're in the past, not in the time where you really existed. But it's important to know that time, even to experience that time. When you're in the past, you don't have to confront the reality that you have today. But to be in the present, you have to confront reality. And there are some Jews, even very religious Jews, dressing in religious garb, that refuse to confront the reality of today. And they're on both sides of the religious spectrum. And one of the big problems today is alcoholism. What does alcoholism do? When one confronts, very often I've seen people who went through unfortunate situations, and they can't deal with the situation. They can't renew themselves. Or they think they don't have the ability to renew themselves. And because they have that attitude, they can't renew themselves. So it's their way of not dealing with reality.
alcoholism is an aid in not dealing with reality. Here we're dealing the end of the Seder. We're here. We're in this time. And there are people that want to deny reality because they can't admit they made a mistake, because of all kinds of other reasons. Like someone recently told me, don't worry, after the elections, all these people will support Israel. Imagine the rationale. We didn't learn from Jewish history. That's more or less what the New York Times said about Hitler, Yamach Shemo. The New York Times, when it was Jewish ownership. There are some people that they don't need to drink. They don't need to become alcoholics, to hallucinate, to accommodate their thinking. Might be different if they heard that their son or their daughter was put in an oven. So this, I think, is the connection between the four cups of wine and the four cups of wine and the Parshas Parah on one hand and Parshas HaChodesh on the other hand. What is Parshas HaChodesh? Renewal. If nature renews itself, yes, there is destruction. Every year there's destruction. Every year, take a look at the trees. But it's not just the trees that renew themselves. We have to renew ourselves. Every year, we have to have a youthful spirit, an attitude of being able to start over again. HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim. Yes, we confront a tragedy. Paraduma is the symbol of confrontation of tragedy. But out of the together with the tragedy, we realize there is Mayim Chayim. And that Mayim Chayim enables us to start anew. But we have to make sure not to hallucinate, not to deny reality. The wine. When you drink it, the Yerushalmi says, the drinking of wine, not during a meal, that makes one drunk. That makes one, if you drink it during a meal, it won't have that same effect. But when you drink it after the meal, it gives you the ability to ignore reality. I wouldn't even say just to deny. To ignore reality. We can start anew only if we don't ignore reality. And reality is learning from the past. We go forward into the future only if we learn from the past. Those people, those Jews, who want on one hand to identify with those that are the enablers of the murderers of the Jewish people. And at the same time, they want to see themselves as being good Jews, as being brothers. They're only able to see that because it's not their children that are being killed. It's not their wives that are being raped.
So they're in a position of denying reality. Some of them are drunk with liquor, and some, but there's a drunkenness without liquor. Liquor during the meal, in a limited fashion, according to the Yerushalmi, does not cause this state of intoxication. But when, after the meal, between the third and fourth cup, between the third and fourth cup, which is after the meal, it's not necessary. It's just something that you take. That puts you in a state of denial of reality. We have to understand that we cannot, it's not enough Pesach night just to be in the past. We have to go to the past. But it's a time capsule, changing the time. We go back to the past, but we have to go back to the present also. We're in the present, and in the present, we have to. Recognize reality, not deny reality. So I think that's the connection between the drinking between the third and fourth cup, and the idea that we have to have Parshas Parah followed immediately with Parshas HaChodesh, because Parshas Parah reminds us about the death, about confronting death. But immediately afterwards, we have to have this attitude of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim Rishon Hu Lachem Lechatshi Hashana, of renewal. It's not just the trees that have to renew themselves. It's not just the leaves and the flowers that have to renew themselves. It's we, the Jewish people, have to renew ourselves. We have to have that youthful spirit. You know, after World War II, so many of those that came over, those at the State of Israel, had that youthful spirit. And they recognized the need. And they didn't deny reality. But unfortunately, the State of Israel has become accepted. And I don't think there's a youthful attitude, this idea of renewal. At the time of the Six-Day War, there was this sense of renewal. And we have to renew ourselves also, we as the Jewish people, in regard to the State of Israel, in regard to the situation that the Jewish people find themselves in. My uncle said that when he was in Germany, there wasn't open anti-Semitism. There were small groups, but they were tolerated. That was the problem. Today in the United States, it's not just that they're tolerated. They are respected. And sometimes by the Jews themselves. We will not, if we learn the lesson of history, when we come back to the present, we will be able to recognize reality. But if we don't learn the lesson of history, then we will not be able to recognize the reality of the present. We cannot drink between the second cup, between the third cup and the fourth cup, because we do not want to hallucinate. We don't want to become drunk. We have to move forward, and we have to renew ourselves. And at the same time, we have to immediately, shortly after we recognize that together with the ashes of the Paraduma, there's Mayim Chayim, we have to renew ourselves with Parshas HaChodesh.
Any questions? Can go in the chat, please.